All right. During that little musical interlude, some great music, have a call here from Missy Raines. Missy, how are you?
I am doing really great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Now, I told everyone at the top of the show that right before 4, they should all hide. And then when Missy calls around 4, they're all going to jump out. So they're probably still singing happy birthday. If you went to a window somewhere, I know that they've all joined in the chorus.
Oh, gosh, you are so funny.
It's one of those internet things you can put together in a heartbeat, and then boom, there you go. So when we set this up, I didn't realize it was your birthday. That makes it extra special that you did call in. I'm just like, I feel really proud that, and I would have been anyway, but gosh, it's your birthday.
Well, it's my pleasure. I appreciate you making the time for me. And, I'm actually home this weekend. And so I've just been, as my dear mother-in-law would say, I've been out tootling.
Say that again?
It's a Virginia word. It's tootling.
Tootling. That's not a word anywhere, Missy. You can say it from Virginia.
I think it's a hyphenated word. Hoot tootling.
All right. So break it down. It's got a hyphen, but what's it hyphenating?
Hoot, H-O-O-T.
Okay.
Hyphen.
Okay.
T-O-O-T-L-I-N-G. I'm making this up.
Well, we had John Weisberger on earlier. He would know all these words. You know, he's so smart.
Well, he is, but, he probably wouldn't even acknowledge that word.
Well, now that you spelled it, we all know what it means. We'll figure it's an excellent way to spend a Saturday on a spring day. So
it is an excellent way.
Oh boy, it's we're talking to Missy Raines, and everybody out there in the bluegrass world is aware of all the great music that you play. And I made the comment at the top of the show that I think they had to eventually rename the IBMA Bass Player of the Year, the Missy Raines Award. I just seemed like every year it was us. You know, Missy's just far and away the one. Not that there aren't other great ones, but you just sort of took that award over for so long.
I am just completely honored and humbled by that, and still it continues to amaze me. And I appreciate being nominated. I was nominated for many, many years before I won, and it was, it truly, self-cliche to say, but it truly is, an honor just to even be mentioned in that group of the folks that have also been nominated and have won. So it's something I'm really, really proud of.
Well, you should hold
very dear.
You should be. There's so many great musicians, and when you reach that level, and like you say, once you get to that level, it's like everybody's pretty darn good. But it's just nice that they would say, well, we think for this year, this one should be the one that we should acknowledge publicly as maybe being more deserving, a cut above. Not that there aren't others that are great, but I think it's a remarkable achievement.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many people that I feel deserve it and should be nominated who haven't been. It's just a nice nod to from your peers that says, we acknowledge what you're doing, and that's all I see it as. It's not a
sure
contest, but yeah, it's a wonderful one thing that I'm happy to have experienced.
Yeah. Listen, there are all kinds of people listening to the show. Tell them a little bit. Let's do a little bit of a rundown for Missy Raines, where she was, and then we'll get to where you are now and your experience in music. And then I want to talk about the new hip, the new album, the other two albums, and a couple other issues. But just give, in case someone's tuned in, and by the way, you can get this on your smartphone if you're smart enough to find it, just for people listening. But tell people a little bit about Missy Raines and how you got into playing music, and a little bit about your history of what you've been doing. Then I want to talk about this new stuff.
Well, my parents were big music lovers, and my dad played just a tiny bit, but not, he wasn't very serious about it, but they were going to see music long before I was born, so I can't, claim that I did it, brought it to them or anything. They were going to see live music as their entertainment for years before I came along and sort of dragged me along with them. And I was the fourth child of the last of four kids, and so I was the first one to actually like going to the music events.
Well, what kind of music events were they? I mean,
well, initially, I think they were going to what you would call country music shows, but you got to remember that was before. I mean, it wasn't before bluegrass, but. Because my parents weren't quite that old, but it was definitely when shows were sort of, you know, bunched together, and so that you'd see Ray Price and Ralph Stanley or you know, at the same show, and my folks were going to see particularly shows, you know, outdoor events in the region where I grew up, and so they were going to see Ray Price, Fair and Young, and all those folks, and my mom was a big fan of those. And then one day, you'd hear bluegrass at these shows, and she was aware of it, but she really got won over at a show with the Country Gentlemen.
Oh.
Which would have been, like, in the early Country Gentlemen, late 50s, you know, when they were just starting, and she just, that was sort of, I mean, you know, John Duffy's voice and their harmony and their presence and frankly, I think their whole attitude, it wasn't, you know, they had a very kind of urban sense about them, and she just really liked that. So then she started sort of seeking out more bluegrass-oriented shows, and which led to the festivals in the 60s and all that. So they just thought it out for music, and then when I came along and I really showed an interest in it, they, of course, then just nurtured that as much as they could possibly do within their means, and they devoted so much of their time and energy and money to just getting me around musicians and in front of live performances and around other pickers.
Well, you know, you make an interesting point talking about your parents going to what was then just called country music. There wasn't a bright line distinction, or no one even attempted really to make a bright line distinction, but back in those days, between country and bluegrass, it was all you know, under the same tent.
Oh yeah, it was, and in fact, in those days, bluegrass was not a hip thing, so it was kind of, you know, the bluegrass people who were playing bluegrass didn't want to be called bluegrass because that wasn't a very popular thing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the way it was.
Yeah.
And so they, but yeah, it was all lumped together.
Okay, so you're going to music, you're going to live concerts. I think that's important. You would agree with that, don't you? Going to live music is a nice thing to be exposed to.
It's everything.
So what is it? And we've talked about the things that started striking you. What was the bass? Was that something that you wanted to play right away? Was it something that you picked up later? How did you get to playing a bass?
No, I mean, I was playing piano and guitar, and that's really what I was thinking of. And then my dad brought home a bass for himself, and he'd gotten it really cheap, and apparently he had a bug to play, and to this day I don't actually know who even showed him, you know, enough to play, but I remember him jamming with the bass. But so this bass comes into our house, and, you know, I don't know, I was like 10 or 11 years old, and it was just, it was the next new thing, and I wanted to play it immediately, and I did start playing it, and I had you know, some guitar knowledge by that point, just a tiny bit, but enough to get started. So it came really easy, and people really liked it, that because the people that we were hanging with locally, who, and the musicians that were jamming, it was like, oh, there's bass now. And so between my dad and I, we would play, and eventually I started playing. You know, that became the thing that I really wanted to play. And through that, then around that time, you know, the Seldom Scene was hitting it pretty big in the, you know, early 70s, mid-70s, and Tom Gray, of course, who I had sort of remembered hearing on record so much of the Country Gentlemen. I didn't get to see him actually play with the Gentlemen that much, except in reunion shows, but I had grown up on the records for sure, and then I got to see him perform with the Velvet Scene, and that, you know, Velvet Scene were rock stars then. I mean, they are now.
No, they were, you're right.
Rock stars then.
Right.
And they were the ones closing out the big festivals on Saturday night and playing for an hour and a half, and Tom was, you know, a great part of what I, you know, really captured my fancy and wanted to play like he was playing. So he was a huge influence.
You know, Tom was on, I was there a couple of weeks ago, which I just was amazed, and I actually let an entire hour go by before I realized how much we had been chatting, and then all of a sudden I'm out of time. But Tom was on for about an hour, maybe last week, and I just, at the breaks, I would tell him, you know, who's coming on and whatnot, and he's a big fan of yours, as you probably are aware, but he said this, which I thought was interesting. I asked him to explain it. Misty Raines would come to the show, and after the show, she would come up and talk to him about playing the bass, but it wasn't so much as how you played it or how you played the notes. He was very distinct about this. Missy would come up to the stage and talk to me about, why did you play that way? Now, there's a lot in that.
Yeah. Oh, he is such a dear man. And he is, you know, he's told me that too. And I believe him, but I can't imagine that I didn't ask, you know, because I didn't know what he was doing. And so I was just, you know, trying, maybe, you know, come across like I knew more or something. But he befuddled me for so long. I mean, I was truly, you know, always trying to figure. I was trying to figure out why he did things. But you know, gosh, he was just so great, and I learned a lot from him. And he's just such a dear man. He is just a great person, and you know, when you're a kid, God, and I could barely complete sentences in front of him. I mean, it was.
You know what? You know, let me rewrite probably what happened. You may have said how, but maybe Tom recognized in what you were asking is what you were really trying to find out is why these choices were made and why these things happened. And he was pretty clear that you asked different questions, and maybe through your way of explaining it, it came through to him that you weren't looking for where do you put your fingers as so much as the decision process and how you reach the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I could see that, and, you know, he made me think about stuff, and at that, up to that point, you have to remember, I mean, this was in the early 70s or mid-70s, you know, there weren't bass players who were taking solos like he was at the time. You know, there might have been a boogie-woogie kind of thing going on, but not like he was. And he was playing melody, and he was improvising, and he was doing things that, you know, to this girl's mind at Bluegrass Festival, she had not seen that. Now, I've seen electric players who were playing with certain acts during that time play a whole lot more bass and play a lot of notes, but not so much on the upright at that time.
Mm.
So he was a real groundbreaker, you know.
Well, it's neat that you found someone that you could sort of, you know, so many great, as the tradition continues with different instruments, it's like somebody will kind of, you know, not lock on, but, you know, focus on a particular player and get so much more than an average person would be listening. You were focused on what Tom was doing at many levels, and that's just kind of a neat thing to be able to experience live. Again, I'm a huge fan of live music. I think it's just a huge experience for so many of your senses. It's more than just listening to the records. Records are cool, but, you know, if you can see it and you go see him and you see what he's doing and get an idea of what he's thinking, you were you picked a good one to kind of follow around.
Yeah.
And he's just such a nice guy. I mean, he was literally, we were on an hour. I ran out of time. I had no idea it had been that long because he's just taught so many great stories and so many things about what he did. But he is absolutely a dyed-in-the-wool Missy Raines fan.
Yes, that's so nice to hear.
That is nice. All right, so that's kind of like where you're a jumping off point for you, as you've discovered the bass, you've encountered Tom Gray live, and you start developing more style. You have your own style for certain, but I mean, clearly at that point you're into this on a pretty serious level.
Yeah, but I don't think I had any sort of style at that point. I just, at that point, I'm still trying to, you know, figure out what it is that I can do it. And so I started, I mean, around this time, then, of course, Tony Rice and David Grisman started doing, I mean, that sort of taking off and doing new acoustic music and dog music. And I started, you know, then I was completely, you know, ed up with that.
You were hooked.
You know, and then Manzanita came out and, you know, all that stuff. And that, but a lot of the dog music, a lot of David Grisman stuff and Tony's stuff at the time, opened up doors for me to explore more jazz. And so that's how I got sort of into those worlds and, you know, just kept going in. I didn't, at that time I wasn't listening to much popular music, you know, some southern rock and stuff like that just by default, but I wasn't really listening to a whole lot that was going on around me at the time. I was just too immersed in what then was kind of cult music, you know, but then, you know, getting into more jazz, and which led me to more popular music and so forth, and then, you know, you just start, the whole world opened up. But initially it was all bluegrass, but then I just started getting exposed to as many other things as possible.
Well, and you talked about the album you mentioned, but we're talking the Misty Rains here, just in case someone just tuned in. You mentioned Manzanita, which was that Tony Rice album that so many different players point to that as kind of a it was such a remarkable event. Even banjo players like it, and there's no banjo on it. So
exactly. Well, they could practice with it.
That's
and
right.
It was perfect.
So, but stuff like that is a jumping off point, and the stuff that David Grisman was doing. I think what you're saying is that it gave you more room to explore within the context of what they were doing. It was a little different sound. It was a jazzier opportunities for you to kind of find what you were doing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and I, you know, Newgrass Revival was happening also at this time, and that was also very exciting to me. And you know, there were just all these people that I and sounds that were taking they were clearly influenced by the same kind of music that I was influenced by, but they were taking their instruments and various combinations of acoustic instruments and creating new things with them and what sounded like new things to me at the time. And so that was exactly like that was my you know, I saw that as like, okay, that's what I want to do, you know, be inspired and try to do something different and unique with these same instruments, or maybe add a few instruments or whatever. But we were all being, I mean, I knew that Sam Bush and Tony Rice and to some extent David Grisman had all been influenced by the same people that I had been influenced by, you know, Monroe and the Stanley Brothers and you know, so, but they were doing their own thing with it.
When you keep mentioning jazz, and of course, I mean, I think the bluegrass jumping off point, what you're discussing now, gave you the opportunity and was a little more easy going to fill in some of those spaces with jazz type moods and feelings. But did you have jazz influences at the same time that were separate from the bluegrass acoustic music?
Oh, you mean jazz stuff that I was listening to that wasn't
yes.
related to bluegrass?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so who were those people?
Well, I mean, early on, very early on, I guess I just fell in love with, like, the Jim Hall and Ron Carter duo. You know, that just struck me really. That was a good little door to go through. It wasn't bebop or anything. It was just, like, really... not understandable. I didn't know what they were doing, but it was accessible. And
now I have a live. Are you talking about? I have a live album of it's Jim Hall and Ron Carter,
mm-hmm.
and it's just them doing duets. Now maybe they did other things, or maybe you saw them live. But I'm thinking that was sometime back in the. Was it in the early? Was it within the last decade, or was it in the 90s? Do you know the album I'm talking about, or you just had other contact with them?
Well, they did a lot. They were doing stuff together, like at least in the 80s and the late 70s.
Okay.
I don't know than what live album you're talking about.
Okay, I don't either. I mean, you obviously had more, but when you mentioned that, of course, I'm a huge fan of both. I think if I could sit down with one musician, this between you and me, Ron Carter would be the guy that I would talk to. Because of his overall, jeepers, criminy, he recorded with everyone, and he's still out there, and he was with everybody's great bass player, and just, wow, what an unlimited ability to improvise.
Yeah, he's pretty great. I mean, I got exposed to David Holland through a Vassar Plymouth record, and David Holland's another great jazz bass player, so I started listening to him and started going, you know, listening to his solo stuff and solo albums, not solo performance, and although I did actually see him perform solo, and just through that, and those are early, so I mean, these days I listen, you know, to as much of everybody as I can, tons of folks and try to listen to as much as I can. I'm not listening to a lot of jazz right now. I'm listening more to different other stuff.
Let me tell you one more quick story that I want to talk about the new album. But I've been a fan of yours for a long time. You mentioned Christian McBride. I've been a fan. He kind of came onto the scene, I guess, there were a lot of new jazz musicians, and he would show up with Roy Hargrove and all these guys, and Christian was, and he had some of his solo albums. But I will tell you an experience for me talking about live music. Pat Metheny came to a local venue where I'm at, and his bass player was Christian McBride. And it's the first time I saw him live, and Pat Metheny is tremendous, but I was so impressed with Christian McBride. Not long after that, and I will say within that same calendar year, your band, Missy Raines and the New Hip, came to that same venue. And it was for whatever reason, the first time, back-to-back, I thought, Missy Raines is the equivalent. Not that I ever didn't think that you weren't. It just struck me that you could be Christian McBride. You could play any of those parts. I'm not trying to sound ignorant about what your work had been to that point, because I knew how expansive it was, but there was something about seeing Christian McBride, and the next time back to that venue, I see you in the New Hip, and it finally occurred to me that you're both at that same area. I mean, to me, it was like, wow.
Wow, that's, I don't even know what to say. I don't feel like that at all, but I appreciate what you're saying. You know, those guys are just playing at a different level.
I think you could go with Pat and his drummer, and you could be Christian McBride. I really do.
That's wonderful. But you know, my background is I don't have any formal training, so it's been for me, it's like I've come from a background of appreciation, and there's something to be said for that. It's not a bad thing, but I appreciate what you're saying.
Well, all right, and I don't mean to talk all the time, but I don't get to talk to you very often, just in passing, but I wanted to tell you that was a moment for me. Now, okay, Jim Hirsch was on the show earlier this year, and of course we talk about the time when you two, I think just a very exploratory time for both of you, when you go off and do your duets, and I have a great music from the both of you, and that must have given you a lot of freedom to explore even more along the lines of what you're talking about. And tell people a little bit about that process.
That was a huge, it was a great growing time for me, and I think I'd like to think for Jim as well, but it sure was for me, and it just the opportunity to work with him. He's like one of the most amazing musicians and amazing people too, but working with him as a musician, I mean, you're never going to be on stage with someone who cares more about what you're doing as well as what he's doing, and that's a rare gift for a musician, to care about what it is that you're trying to get across. And by that I mean, you know, he's like the best support player in the world. But he's also like this amazing lead player. You know, he can just, as he's proving now, he's going around and killing it with the solo shows.
Oh,
and I always knew he would. But when he's supporting you, you know, it's the best thing in the world, because he really genuinely cares, and he's got all this musical maturity and depth about his playing, and he's just able to just do that for you. And it's so he provided this amazing net, safety net for me to just try to explore stuff. And he was really so, you know, supportive about it, just also, you know, as a friend. And so that was just a beautiful time. We had a blast traveling the roads, and I hadn't sung at all until, lead and stuff, until that duo. And that was a really terrifying thing. And, you know, we spent time on the road doing that, and that was just a really great thing to get to sing more then, and that definitely kind of prepped me a little bit for where I was headed.
Well, and with the band Missy Raines and the New Hip, you are singing a lot.
Yeah, especially now, I'm just singing a whole lot, and I'm just really enjoying it.
And your vocals now, we'll talk about the new album in just a minute. I want to play some cuts from it, whatever you want to play, but your vocals are different too, don't you think? Don't you think you're singing differently than you did? And maybe it's just another thing where you're growing into the role more, but your vocals are more, I don't know how to describe it, I don't want to say more full. I don't know. Can you understand what I'm saying? You seem to be singing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, totally. I mean, and I hope that they would be different because it's been several years and since, you know, I was just starting out, even though I wasn't, you know, young, but I was that part of my career was just beginning. I think that they've changed a lot. But what I've done is really just try to find my voice, you know, like figure out what it is that I do and then try to make that work. Because I've always known that I didn't have this big, you know, big, loud, kind of outrageous acrobatic voice. I mean, that's just not who I am. But I always knew that that I had a certain register to my voice and I could push a lot of air and make things hopefully sound kind of warm. And if I learned how to really work that it would, you know, it would I could get across the song. So that's just what I've been working on, just trying to find my voice.
One more thing. Jim Hurst was in town about a week and a half ago, and I said, Jim, Missy's going to be on the show. And he said, ask her about this. This is all he said. I didn't ask for the follow-up. Ask her this. Missy One Key.
He didn't say anything else?
No, I didn't ask, and he just said, it was kind of like in The Graduate when the guy was saying plastics. He said, tell her this, Missy One Key.
Yeah, well, okay, so you have to realize when you spend that much time together on the road, you create a language anyway, and that no one else understands. And we do this. I've done this in every band that I've been in, and what he's referring to, my grand debut, as he did tell you, didn't he?
He did not tell me the story. He said, ask the question.
He is referring to my grand debut as a washboard player on stage where apparently I completely suck at playing washboard.
Oh, no.
Because first, I could not make my arms work independently of each other, so I was like raking with my right hand, like rick, 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 and then I just stopped that, and then I'd hit the other side with my left hand, and it was the worst washboard playing ever, and he laughed so hard he couldn't breathe watching me do this. So he, from then on, called me Missy One Key.
Missy One Key. All right, he didn't tell me the story. He just said, "Tell her this, and she'll know, and she'll get a kick out of it." So that was good. That was worth waiting. I've been waiting for 2 weeks to tell Missy Raines, Missy One Key.
Yeah,
that's good.
It's really a visual thing that I'm sorry. Wish I could show you, but I can't really show you. And you're asking probably why were you doing this in the first place? Well, a friend of mine just made me get up on stage and invited me up, and put this like washboard thing with bells and things on it.
Oh, yeah. Kind of the one-man band.
I had no idea what to do. Yeah. So he just thought that was the funniest thing he'd ever seen.
Well, it takes years to master a washboard. You know that.
Apparently. apparently.
Oh boy, that was good. I'm glad he mentioned that. He wouldn't. Yeah, that was good. That was good. That was worth waiting. All right, Misty Raines and the New Hip. This is your second album, right? Under Misty Raines and the New Hip.
Yes.
Yeah, and tell a little bit about that. Then I want to get into the second one because they're really different.
They're very different. The first one was called Inside Out, and this one is called New Frontier.
They're more different than the titles, though, aren't they?
Well, the first one, you know, was right after the band had basically sort of started. Like, I put the band together, and we were doing almost all instrumentals, and I would sing like two or three songs in a set, and so just so folks know, I mean, I'm still doing instrumentals, I'm still soloing on the bass, I'm still doing all that stuff as well, but I just decided that, I mean, I've always wanted to sing more, so this record actually is all vocals, and it's just, to me, it felt like a completely natural progression, but it's not because I'm not going to be playing any, you know, less, or
you're just adding it to it.
So, and the first record was, I have to say, it was a lot less focused in terms of, like, our conceptual, one hates to admit these things, but it was kind of the songs that we, like, put together, and we threw them on this record, and they all were very important to me, some of them more so than others, but they were all definitely a postage stamp of what we were doing at the time, or a snapshot is really what I was thinking, of what we were doing at the time, and they were all important. But this record actually, like, to me, has a conception behind it. Like, you know, events that occurred and that brought me to the songs that I chose, and they all sort of have a common theme underneath them, whether that's readily available, like readily recognizable, that's to, you know, remains to be seen, but I know it's there, you know, that there's this kind of theme underneath the whole record.
So pick one that you would like for me to play, and then we'll play that and we'll talk about it a little bit. Off of the new album, Misty Raines and the New Hip, The New Frontier, tell me which one to click on. I got them all lined up.
Wow. Well,
your choice.
You know,
this is your choice. It's your birthday. It's your choice.
It's my first. Well, I would say New Frontier.
Okay. And you want to set it up at all, or you just want to go to that?
Let's go to that.
All right. We're going to hear New Frontier, which is the title cut from Missy Raines and the New Hip. And give it a listen, and we'll come back and talk about it a little bit. This is fun. Thanks so much. Happy birthday again to Missy. That's why she gets to choose what we're playing, folks. So that's just the way it is today. Hold on. All right. We are still with Missy Raines, and that was the title cut from the new album, The New Frontier, and that's the one that you got to pick on your birthday, and tell the people why you picked that one to play today.
You know, I just fell in love with that song. It was written by Zach Bevel, who is one of the Farewell Drifters, and he actually pitched it to me. He heard us play last year on Music City Roots, and he was like, we were sort of changing the direction of the band a little, and he heard us, and then the next day he like pitched me a couple songs, and this was one of them, and I just loved it. I love the feel of it, I love singing it, and I like the words, because they're a little dark, but then it's also about sort of, you know, just trying something new, and that's what I feel like I'm doing. So it just felt really great, and I particularly like the way that cut turned out in the studio. Ethan Ballinger, who's my guitar player, he also co-produced this record, and he had a huge part to do with how beautiful this record sounds, and all the musical wonderfulness that, and the layers and stuff. He
How long did it take you to put this together? Because you and I were talking about this last fall, and you were thinking there might be a December date. But tell the people that are listening, and again, where I need to identify everyone, so I'm speaking to Missy Raines, how long did it really take you to get this project into form where it's now available?
Well, you know, it didn't take all that long. I mean, to be honest, the first record took a lot longer. But this one, because this was, you know, the band that's there now, Ethan Ballinger, Jared Walker, and Josh Fox, and it's just the four of us, and we've been out on the road from last year, and so we just went in. We went in the studio, I think it was last August, and just spent several days. We cut all the tracks, and then over the course of the fall, we, you know, added on the vocals and stuff like that. But really, day-wise, I don't know, we might have spent 3 weeks or something on it, actually count the days of just tracking and overdubs. But because they didn't happen all consecutively, it just happened over a course of several months. And then of course, we did take a bit of time mixing and tweaking the mixes. And I always say that it's like, okay, yeah, full disclosure, I have a studio in my basement, and I happen to be married to a great engineer, Ben Surratt,
yep,
who engineered it. And, you know, I'm quite sure that if I didn't have access to that, I probably would have stopped mixing it about a month earlier. But we just kept listening to it, and we'd say, oh, let's tweak this. And so we'd make these tiny little changes, but they were important. And so we would do that. So, I mean, we drug that part of it out because we could, and Compass was wanting to release this a little later in the year than I had thought initially. So we had time. But, you know, I couldn't give you an exact number of days, but when it was all said and done, it really didn't take all that much time because we've been planning this stuff and we had the arrangements, and so it was just a matter of going in and capturing it.
Okay. Now, we off the air, when we were playing the tune that you selected, we were talking a little bit about the album art, and I got this. You sent me this. I got it, I think, Thursday, and I fell in love with the music on it, and I couldn't wait to talk to you about it. But the album art and album liner notes, and I just kind of get stuck on those things. But tell about the selection of this cover art and why you chose it. Tell them what it is, how you found that. I just think this is fascinating.
Well, I was wanting something that reflected as much as possible the music, and I knew that, and in my mind, the music on this record was very different than anything I'd done before, and it had I felt like the music, especially some of the production that we'd done, it was kind of lush and colorful, and so I wanted to reflect that. And so one day, actually around Christmas time, I was shopping in a local store here, a local art gallery, for Christmas stuff, and I found two cards from an artist. They were like little postcard things, and I loved this artist's work. It was not this print, but I loved the approach of this artist. So I bought them, and I thought, well, these would be great inspiration pieces for the cover. And I held on to them, and you know, in talking with Compass, when we were working on the art design, you know, I submitted them, but we both agreed that it was not probably they weren't the right things. So then I went to this person's website and I found that picture, the Boundlessness in Bloom, and I just, it just took my breath away. And what I loved about it, I mean, obviously the colors just simply are gorgeous, in the flowers and the greens and the blues. But I love that she's being lifted, you know, off the ground and into the air. And so that just makes me, it feels to me a lot like how this music and this not just the music. I mean, I don't mean to, you know, that sounds, you know, conceited, but
just the
feeling that being able to pursue this music for me, how that makes me feel, the opportunity and the gift that it is to be able to try this stuff and do something new and be surrounded by such great musicians that I have in my band, and the opportunity at this point in my life to do something that's different and who knows whether succeed or not. It doesn't, you know, that it's just, I get the opportunity to do this. So it's like I'm, you know, being lifted off the ground in this beautiful way and covered by flowers. I mean, yeah. What's not to love?
Well, when I saw this, I thought Misty has a reason for this. And the artist name again, we talked off the air, but the artist name again is?
Yi Nguyen.
Okay, and the name of the album, I knew, the name of the album cover is Boundlessness in Bloom, right?
That's the name of the print, of his painting.
Yeah, the album cover, yeah.
Which is the album cover, yeah, right, essentially. Right. And Boundlessness in Bloom, and I'm sure if you Google that, you can find his.
Oh, yeah.
But Yi Nguyen is spelled D-U... Why? It was just how you spell his first name, even though it's pronounced E. And he's actually an artist in Charlotte, North Carolina, who, again, all of this I didn't know, he actually also did the cover of Matt Flinner's release that he had last year. And I had seen it, but I didn't know it was the same artist.
Okay.
So that's how expansive his work is. And and when we played in Charlotte not too long ago, he and Sandy came out, his wife, they both came out to the gig, and it was really exciting. It was to see them there, and they have a shop there in Charlotte where they sell his work and other artists' work.
Well, you picked a good one. I didn't mean to spend so much time about the album cover, but because there's a lot of great music, obviously. But the album cover is it's a woman who's, the whole feeling is up. There's an uplift going on for no effort of her own. She's, even her hair is pointing upwards. You know.
Yeah. And you know, like a lot of the theme of the record is kind of coming from sort of a darker place or a not quite as happy place, but then the sense of that there's a definite sense of being like coming through it, coming through the fire,
mm-hmm.
and that's also, you know, what I wanted to reflect with this cover.
Well, I you know, like I said, it seemed obvious to me there was a point to it. I posted a little something on Facebook about it just because I can, and found the artwork, and people were very struck by it, which is kind of interesting. So you made your point well on that one.
Good.
What's next? You want to play another one from the new one? Let you get another pick again.
Oh, well, I could listen to any of them, but you may know what your listeners are looking for.
All right. We're back, and that was a cut from Missy Raines and the New Hip. Missy is still on the phone, and that was the cut, Missy, that had was called What's the Calling For, and that you had a guest on that. Sam Bush joined you on Slide, Mandolin Slide, which is so recognizable when Sam cuts in with one of those, and then the vocals, too. And there must have been some selection involved in putting that tune on the album. Give us just a little thumbnail of why you chose that one. I think it's a fascinating process as to picking tunes and which one you're going to go with.
You mean why I picked him for that song?
Well, both. Why you picked him for that song, and then why you picked that song.
Oh, yeah. Well, the song, What's the Call For, has a lot to do with, again, the sort of the underlying theme of the record of, you know, why what we're doing here, and not just why we're driven to do what we do, but how that process affects us and our life and everything, and then of course I can't remember a time when I didn't know who Sam was and how he's affected my music so much, and I wanted to you know, have him on the record, and that seemed like a really great opportunity for him to swell away. He's playing both mandolin and the slide.
Yeah, yeah, he's got both of them. Yeah, at the same time, probably.
Right. And he, you know, he just was so great. He came in, and he seemed to really enjoy it, and he liked the track, and so he came in and overdubbed, actually, on it, and there's just, you know, he's a great person. I don't know him very well, but he's just a good guy. And so it was just, for me, it was a great opportunity. We spent some time a while back opening for the Sandwich Band, so that was, and it was a great fit with the band, and so I thought it would be really great to have a play on something.
Cool. Hey, somebody just posted, we have a little chat room that runs, and someone said, Steve, please tell Missy there are some Hooker Holler Symphony fans still around.
Wow. Oh, my God. Okay, well, that's awesome. And you're probably thinking, okay, this is the section that we don't want to go in.
No, I'm okay. You can if you want.
Yeah. Well, the really funny thing about this band is that, first of all, this was a band that I was in when I was like 14. And you're like, oh, okay, this is really weird. But it's when I was growing up in West Virginia, I played in a band with a great friend of mine, Pat Shields, and Hooker Holler Symphony. And actually, the other tie in the Small World department is the banjo player in that band was Diana Haynes at the time, who then became Diana Eldridge, who is Chris Eldridge's mom.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so she's, you know, there's that connection.
And we'll draw that thread out. That's a Ben Eldridge connection, who was the banjo player for Seldom Seen, correct?
Right, yeah. Right. And she's actually, you know, they're not married anymore, but they had Chris, and so there's this big connection. But yeah, I was in this band, and of course, I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world to be in a band like that when I was, you know, I was only 14. The rest of them were all adults, but again, this was a situation where my folks, you know, probably went way out of their comfort zone just to allow me to be with these adults on the weekends. They always made sure that, you know, somebody was supervising me, but they, you know, either there or they entrusted me with adults that they could trust, and I went out and I played gigs every weekend my whole childhood. So that's where that comes from.
Oh, listen, where can people find this album, and where can they find you live? Give us a little where you're going to be, how they get this new album, which is a wonderful thing called Misty Rains and the New Hip New Frontier. Tell us that first. How do they get their hands on it?
Well, we're taking pre-orders now. If the best thing today would be to just go to compassrecords.com.
Okay.
They're accepting pre-orders. I'm going to be doing pre-orders on my website as well. Very soon, and its official street date is not till June 25th, but pre-orders, of course, will go out right before that. And but here's a little secret. The secret is that if you come to my gigs, you can actually get it in person. So, because I do have some with me, and so the next, we're going to be at the Crimson Moon in Dahlonega, Georgia, on April 20th, and we've got some North Carolina shows in May, and we're going to be at Delfest this year coming up.
Great.
So, yeah, we're going to be at the Berkeley Cafe in Raleigh on May 9th. We're going to be at the Trent River Coffee Company down at New Bern, North Carolina on May 10th, and over in Virginia Beach to the Tabloid Offensive Folk on May 11th. And then, of course, Delfest, and we got a bunch of more things coming this summer. But if you just want to check it out, you can come to my website, MissyRains.com.
There you go. All right, good. One more question. Someone had asked me online earlier in the week about the bass that you're playing.
Yeah. That bass is the bass that my dad brought home. And it's a K. It's a 1937 K. And it's, you know, it's been road hard, put up wet, and just, you know, it's my baby, and it. My dad bought it. I don't think my dad didn't realize quite the deal that he really got when he bought it and brought it home. But it's a great bass. It's standing here looking at it right now.
And if they buy the CD, can they get a sticker also?
Yes, the sticker. We always throw in stickers when we send out our CD orders. You can come back and get them for free. If you just email me, I will send you a sticker.
We were talking when the songs were playing that I put the sticker that Ben gave me a while back on my banjo case, and I posted it on Facebook, and it's just people are like, "Wow, how can I get the sticker? How can I get the sticker?" Well, the sticker costs $15.99. And the CD will be free at that point.
Exactly. Now, you know, the people, we have reproduced those stickers many times because people love them, and we just keep printing them because they are a big hit. So I'm happy to give them out to anyone who asks.
It's just it's a cool little circle, oval, says Get Hip, and then MissyGrains.com, and I got mine. So people ought to track you down. Missy, gosh darn, thanks so much for calling in on your birthday. I've enjoyed this completely. We're out of time. I'm going to let you get back to enjoying your birthday, and like I said, everybody's saying happy birthday for you as soon as you came on, so that'll get you started.
I felt that very much. Thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate it.
Oh, gosh. Well, don't be a stranger. We'll come back and do this again another time, okay?
Sounds great. Thank
All
you.
All right. See you, Missy. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was fun. New album, The New Frontier, Missy Raines and The New Hip and The New Frontier. Gosh, you have to like what she's bringing to the music in general, where she's coming from, what her ideas are, and even down to the album cover. And when you see the art and you connect it with what Missy's been talking about, you'll recognize that those are choices. Those are choices that Missy has made, and she makes really good ones and has reasons for them. And gosh, what a nice person.